Welcome to the Green Insider, powered by eRenewable. Each and every podcast, host Mike Niemer will bring you energy experts to help you better understand the renewable and sustainability space. Education's important to us because it's important to you, the listener. Now, here's Mike Niemer.
Welcome in to the Green Insider Podcast, powered by eRenewable. I'm your host, Ron Culver, and with me, as always, is the CEO of eRenewable, Mike Niemer. On today's episode, Mike has the pleasure of speaking with Brian Connor, project manager with Audubon Engineering Company. But before we get into their conversation, let's hear a very important message from the CEO of eRenewable, Ann Niemer.
Ann Niemer here, COO of eRenewable. We know today whether you're a public company, private equity, or privately held company, ESG and sustainability are important to your company. At eRenewable, we can help you achieve some of those goals. If you have any questions or need any assistance with regards to reaching your sustainability goals, please visit us at eRenewable.com to learn more. As always, thank you for listening to The Green Insider, powered by eRenewable.
Thanks, Ann. And now here's Mike with project manager for Audubon Engineering Company, Brian Connor.
Welcome to The Green Insider Podcast, powered by eRenewable. I'm Mike Niemer, your host today. Today I have a guest from Audubon Engineering Company, Mr. Brian Connor, project manager. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what. Being new to the show, not only for yourself, but the company's also new to the show, do us a favor, give the listeners a little background on yourself, tell them a little bit about the company, and then you and I will start a conversation.
Sure. My name is Brian Connor, and I work for Audubon Engineering Company, and been a project manager for them for about 5 years. Before that, I worked still in the oil and gas industry. I originally started in background in refining at Valero Houston Refinery. I love to go hunting and fishing. I'm kind of a gearhead. Like to work on cars and welding and fabrication, and got two dogs that I love, and I've got a little 2-year-old boy that I love that is in Alaska with my fiance.
Well, how about that? You got a full life, and you know, Valero Refining, you know, I'm very familiar with them. Back in my refined products brokering days, mm-hmm. Valero was one of my good customers. So anyway, very familiar with them. Well, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about Audubon and what you guys have going on within the company.
Sure. We've got 15 locations, about 1,800 employees. We're a full EPC company. So we do right-of-way survey. We do environmental permitting as well. We do fabrication and assembly and commissioning and automation, and we also do our global engineering for our clients. We kind of do a full gamut of things from project life cycle of stage one all the way to implementation.
Well, you know, in today's world, net zero's on the top of everybody's mind. That's their goal. Everybody wants to be at net zero by 2030, 2040, 2050. You don't know, right? I personally think it's going to be hard to achieve without using renewable energy credits or carbon credit offsets. Not everybody believes that way, but that's my own personal belief. You guys are involved to help your customer achieve net zero without using the carbon credits and the renewable energy credits. Would that not be correct?
Yes, sir. That's exactly correct. We're trying to implement a waste-to-energy type project. We have done so much work in the midstream business that we have actually just been granted a U.S. patent. We're waiting on a few regulations to go through the door, and we're looking to implement the first one here shortly.
Well, that's terrific. You know, regulations to get through the door, that's the hang-up on all this stuff that mm-hmm. we're doing, whether it's an interconnection fee or whatever across these grids. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us about the project theory and, you know, your patent and everything you're trying to do that's going to help the consumer and your customer.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to explain it pretty high level. When you fill up your gas tank at the gas pump, you'll notice that there'll be vapors coming out, really minimal at first, but then it starts to build up, especially on a hot day. What we're trying to do is capture that on a very bigger scale. So we want to capture it at barges and ships, truck loading facilities. The places where you get your fuel from, we want to go there and eliminate routine flaring.
There's issues with flaring, right?
Yes.
That's what all the hubbub's about. Tell us about the different issues that are involved when flaring is involved.
So flaring is not always consistent. When you have wind, you'll get over aeration, you'll get under aeration, and that really affects the destruction efficiency. So you might be thinking that you're flaring everything off, and you know, until you do testing, you might find out that, you know, say 5% of methane made it through accidentally, right? Flaring is efficient for the oil and gas process, but we think that our process will actually benefit everybody as a whole, including the people that are normal working people that are filling up their gas tanks every day to get to work or take their kids to soccer practice or football practice. So that's what we're trying to achieve, is reducing the cost at the pump.
In layman's terms, what's your process involved?
So it's a system, a method of diluting vapor to generate electricity. And we can go into it deeper if you would like.
Okay, it's time for a little education, listeners. Let's dig a little deeper. Go for it.
So we want to capture the vapors, which is already happening at most of these terminals and facilities. And we want to compress it to a point where we can put it in a storage system, where we have a main and a regen and a guard system to be able to take an intermittent loading and turn it into a steady-state fuel source. At that point, we enrich it with natural gas, because the solution is dilution, in order to get clean combustion. And then we're going to push it through a microturbine, which, you know, microturbines have been around for a long time. Love to go into the history of it. But essentially, it's like a jet engine without producing thrust. It's driving a generator that produces electricity. So it's a waste-to-energy type project.
So the energy you're developing from the waste is going to be electricity?
Electricity, and then you're also able to capture the wasted heat. So you're able to capture waste heat recovery through combined heat and power. These incentives exist with the Inflation Reduction Act, and it ends up being a pretty efficient system as a whole, with 70% of your fuel source being free, right?
Okay, and so you mentioned trying to eliminate, you know, the methane that's going up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
That is important now, because now there's all these penalties if you emit methane into the air, and each year the penalty gets larger, correct?
That's correct. So you've got methane penalties, you've got carbon capture credits that are available. So using waste heat recovery and our method would give you carbon credits on the back end. And then if you use renewable natural gas instead of natural gas, you're actually looking at possibility of using or collecting renewable energy credits just as if it was solar or wind.
Oh, that's interesting. I've not heard that one before. Let's talk about that a little bit more. We all know what renewable energy credits are. Tell us how waste to heat gives us a wreck.
Yeah, so with renewable natural gas, you know, the cost of renewable is a little bit more expensive than traditional natural gas. But places like ERCOT, which is a regional transmission organization, they allow you to efficiently combust with renewable natural gas as long as the fossil fuel source base is no more than 25%. And then you're able to basically claim it as if it was solar or wind.
Well, how about that? See, we did learn something today, everybody. So with that said, let's go over what Audubon does for their customers, not necessarily in this, but you said you have how many different groups? You're six different groups?
Oh, I forget how many total affiliates. We're growing as the day goes long, right?
Yeah.
We are definitely a niche company. We really are trying to niche in the mid-cap, which everybody kind of defines that a little bit differently. But we're really trying to capture projects where it's in between, let's say, $10 million and $300 million.
Well, one question I've got for you, Mr. Brian, is tell the listeners what a comparison of the new process looks like versus the old process. Give us your thoughts on that comparison.
So there's existing technologies such as a vapor recovery unit, which is a gas to liquids conversion. There's also a vapor combustion unit, which is essentially a flare. It's not labeled as a flare. And then you've got thermal oxidizers as well as regenerative thermal oxidizers, which use a lot of natural gas in order to achieve combustion. The VRUs are actually quite interesting because you need a lean gas stream in order to mix your recovered liquid back into the product. So it's not always a good fit for terminals to go with a VRU, and they recover very little in liquid percentage. So they recover about 1% maybe 2% on the high side, depending on what they're loading. So if you load 10,000 barrels, right, you're recovering 100 barrels. And then there's some recuperated costs that, you know, are benefits to the client, but the operating costs and the amount of energy that goes into it makes it not really energy efficient. Then you look at vapor combustion units, and, you know, this is essentially a flare, and it's a stack, and we're just, you know, supplementing with a little bit of natural gas with the vapor stream, and then you have a waste heat coming out of the top that you can't recover because most of these stacks are typically 10, 12 feet in diameter, 40, 50 feet tall. There's no way to recover the waste, right? The thermal oxidizers, and I touched on it briefly, they just use a lot of natural gas in order to make it efficient for them. Thermal oxidizers have their, you know, their use at ethanol plants and things like that, chemicals and solvents, right? So the existing technologies are there. They've been around forever. You know, a lot of times when we talk to clients, they say, oh, I can't believe this. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Why didn't we think of this before, right? So with our process, we're using roughly the same amount of natural gas as a vapor combustor unit, which is a VCU. And then we're given the ability to recover electricity and waste heat, which ultimately drives the price down because we're not having to pay these added costs that these terminals are having to pay, right?
Well, what first jumped out of me when you were talking about the waste that it creates is just waste, mm-hmm. Okay? So in the oil field, you've got the sludge at the bottom of the tank that they can't get out. Eventually somebody comes by, drains it, and repurposes it, and he heats it up and recycles it, and then they go sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't they do something like that with the waste that you guys are having to leave?
Yeah. So, again, it's in the name, right, the vapor upcycle system. We're trying to recycle and upcycle and make everything sustainable and reusable again. And by doing that, it makes it more energy efficient for the whole system. Right?
And so the waste is reused again,
yep,
as a different product or a
like waste heat would be, you could, and this is what we're seeing in some of these terminals, is now they're starting to get raw feedstocks that are renewable that thermally degrade whenever they have to store them. So they have to keep these products such as corn oil, tallows, fats, things like that. They have to keep them at 120 degrees under storage before they can send them to a facility to be processed.
Gotcha.
So we're able to capture the waste heat recovery and use hot water or hot oil, quench oil, right?
Yep.
Or even if you have an on-site boiler, we're able to do this as a pass-through for boiler feed water supply, right?
Yep, and since you're doing this at refineries, and I heard you mention the corn and everything and ethanol,
mm-hmm.
So your product can help those methanol or ethanol developers?
Yeah, definitely. Ethanol plants actually consume a lot of electricity, and most of the time they're actually located in a spot where, they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Iowa, Nebraska type areas, right?
Yeah, and so they have grid reliability issues, which is a lot of time that's why they go with a regenerative thermal oxidizer. They try to recover what they can out of it.
And you know, listeners, that's important to you because when you pull up at your gas station to fill up, there's high odds that there's ethanol in your tank of gas because mm-hmm. That's what we do to help make it a little bit greener, right?
Correct. And we just passed a year-round E15 regulation in the Midwest. So it's year-round now.
Yeah, and E15, that makes it 15%, is that correct?
Correct, 15% ethanol.
So you have your straight regular, and then they add 15%, and now you have your E15, right?
Correct. And biodiesel is the same way, right?
Oh, right. Yep. That would be the same way, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's all fascinating stuff. What else do you think we should know about what you're doing at Audubon with regards to it? Now, let me back up a little bit. You got this big certificate frame here
mm-hmm.
of a patent that you guys have. Have you actually talked about that on what you've talked about today? Where's that patent fit in?
We've talked with clients. We've never talked with media. This is the first time that we're addressing it. We were granted the patent in January of 2024 this year. It was about 2 years and 2 months long process, and Audubon has been very supportive all the way through. They've given us everything that we've asked for in the process. We've been back and forth working on discovery of other patents for months and months and months, there was no doubt in my mind that it was going to be a patent from the beginning of the process. just because of the amount of research that my coworker and I had done.
So your coworker, Mr. Ray, standing over here, tell us exactly of everything you've talked about. Where does the patent fit in?
So we're really starting to target refined products that are being loaded typically in the Midwest. And that's because of the regulations that are being federally mandated here soon, which is, for those that are listening, you're welcome to look up the gasoline distribution rule and dig through it. These are what they call NESHAP and New Source Performance Standards, emissions regulations. Short verbiage would be MACT and GAC standards, right? With these microturbines, we're actually looking at doing BACT emissions regulations, so that it would be best achievable technology versus maximum achievable technology or generally acceptable technology, right? So we're looking at the best of the best by using a microturbine for emissions.
Well, congratulations to you and Ray for the development of that, and congratulations for Audubon for
thank you
partnering up with you guys and bringing this to market. That's very exciting for all parties involved.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for setting this up for me.
Our pleasure. Thank you for coming through our website and asking me for a conversation. It's been a pleasure meeting you all, and we'll have to do this again real soon as things start developing. Please come back on to one of our follower Fridays and give us an announcement.
Yes, sir, will do. And if anybody's interested, we'll be announcing this on our website, and it'll be on LinkedIn as well, so you'll be able to find it here in the next week or two.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Brian Connor from Audubon Engineering Company. I'm Mike Niemer, and as the saying goes, you try to learn something new every day, and we were responsible for today's lesson. Thank you for listening to the Green Insider, powered by Renewable. Have a great rest of your day.
Once again, we'd like to thank Brian Connor for joining the podcast today. And a special thank you to all you for tuning in. A brief reminder that if you're not yet subscribed to the Green Insider podcast, don't hesitate and become one today from wherever you receive your podcasts. And please, leave us a 5-star rating.